Thank you, Paul, for that industry perspective. And now to put, let's call it an alternative perspective from Tim Johnson, who's representing NGOs here. Tim. Thank you, Chris.
Well, I don't have a presentation, but I couldn't see you behind the TV monitor on the stage, so in 30 seconds I wouldn't see you disappear to coffee, so I thought I'd come up. Good morning. As I've been introduced, I represent a coalition of NGOs. And I'd like to give some thoughts, but I live and work in the UK, and many of you will know that, that last week we had a general election. And in the build-up to that general election, we had for the first time the sort of US-style presidential TV debates. So we had our three prospective prime ministers over a series of 2 or 3 weeks, you know, in front of the nation talking about the key challenges facing the country. And we all settled down every evening to look forward to a sort of evening of sort of challenge and counter-challenge. And what we actually found in the first one is rather there was a little bit of challenge and counter-challenge, but one thing the media picked up on was everyone said, I agree with Nick, I agree with David, I agree with Gordon. And to some extent, listening to the views that I've just heard here, I can actually agree with a lot of my panelists. I think, Scott, you were the first to introduce the idea that, you know, there's lots of many ingredients needed for this solution. I agree with that. Carl, you articulated very well the challenge that that we all face. We've also had reference to the targets, the alternative fuels, to the range of technology. I think, Philip, you threw in the idea of not all the solutions being found within the industry, that you know, perhaps you can look at modal shift. And these are all things that we would subscribe to. So I think in the interest of time, if we take that as read, I can sort of put aside the speech and not go over the same ground and maybe just concentrate on one or two key issues which perhaps haven't been elaborated sufficiently so far, at least in my opinion. I think the first one and the key characteristics of what I want to say relate to the need for early action and actually having a long-term vision. And I think that long-term vision has to be binding, it has to be an unambiguous strategy, and it has to have a timetable in place. I think we collectively have to be able to turn around to the general public, to other UN institutions, and actually tell them what role aviation will play in a low-carbon society. What role will aviation play in actually meeting the overall temperature, or keeping the overall temperature increase at or below 2 degrees above pre-industrialized levels by 2050? I think that's the question that our audience, our wider audience, not in this room, but the wider global audience, wants us to answer. I think articulating that and defining that is obviously through targets. But before you set the targets, you need to do two things. You need to look at the scenarios and the trajectories for the growth in carbon emissions, not just in this sector, but throughout the world. And I was delighted that in the presentation from the Director of the Air Transport Bureau, we had reference to close collaboration and coordination with IPCC and indeed with UNFCCC in helping to understand the scientific evidence that informs that. And also, we need to understand exactly what the contribution is of all these measures that you've heard from my fellow panelists. I think we understand that they will all play a role, but what role? We have already, in the CAPE process, a system whereby we actually examine through an independent experts panel the likely outcome in certain areas. There's currently a study on fuel burn, for example. We've had them in the past on NOx emissions. Having that same sort of process, look at each and every one of the issues that have been identified here to understand when they will be available, the extent to which they will contribute, will also be a big part in actually helping us to define our targets. Without this assessment, I think it's quite hard to actually make that decision. One thing I would say is that we need to draw a line in the sand right now. And I think I would like to say that from this day on, we certainly don't see any net increase in aviation emissions going forward from this year. This process that I'm referring to, we have some experience of from a UK perspective. I don't want to go into the detail of it. It was a study that was done into UK aviation. But nevertheless, it posed the same question. We have in the UK a government target to reduce emissions across the economy by 80% by 2050. And the question came up, what role does UK aviation emissions play in that? and our Committee on Climate Change, advisors to government on this, was asked to look at many of the similar components that have been put forward to you today and actually advise on whether that was actually possible to fit that in. And the headline message was that, you know, if we could actually keep aviation emissions by 2050 at 2005 levels, we could ask the other sectors to reduce their emissions by 90%. And together, we can actually achieve the overall climate objective. And that's what it's about. I don't think you should be nervous about talking about targets. It doesn't mean that there will be a close mirror image of what happens in the UNFCCC process and what happens in aviation. But they've got to be relevant to each other. And we've got to look very closely at what aviation can do and play its role in actually getting there. So don't be nervous. I think, you know, the fact that you can actually see with the UK example that aviation, there was appreciation, that there was very high abatement costs, that it was very difficult to make reductions on the same scale as in other sectors, and actually it would be on a different trajectory to the other economies. That is the key question. But by putting them on different trajectories, you actually come to the same end point. I think with the assessment in place, you can set those targets. They shouldn't be arbitrary, neither should they just be convenient. They shouldn't just be the sum of what the industry could do. They may be suitably challenging, but as they informed by scientific input, we know where we're going to be heading. I don't think, as much as I would like to promote and support all these initiatives, that we're going to get there without the need of or help of market-based measures. So I think from the NGOs, we would make it very clear that we certainly see, in the medium term, a global emissions trading scheme for the aviation sector. That doesn't mean that because you have a global emissions trading scheme in place, that there isn't a role for all these measures. In fact, the whole point of trading is you only need to trade over and above the target that has been set for you. To the extent that technology and alternative fuels can help you get there, that actually means there would be less additional burden on the aviation industry ultimately to trade. What it does do is provide us with a safety net. I say in the medium term because I think it'll take time to get there. In the short term, I think that we would certainly support the regional actions that are already in place. We would encourage more regions to come forward with plans of their own. I think although you might need time to actually put the global trading scheme in place, certainly an early identification of what the key building blocks and key design elements are for that would help the regional schemes to actually have a degree of equivalence and actually be worked up on the same basis, so we can help to learn and share experiences that way. And I suspect that it may be uncomfortable to hear it, but we would actually see part of that trading scheme being built around auctioning. I think it's imperative that this sector does start to generate some revenues. Revenues are dominating the, and finance issues are dominating the climate change discussions generally. You'll hear more about that in the coming days. But I think it is important that ICAO has some revenue available to it to spend either on climate change mitigation or into easing the transition towards that sort of low-carbon approach for aviation. And finally, I think I would just add that whilst we're talking about trading and open access to the carbon markets, that doesn't mean that we wouldn't like to see the aviation industry doing all that it can to minimise its own emissions. And I think continuing to focus on efficiency is the right approach for within the aviation sector. We certainly see CO2 standards as a big part of that to try and reduce overcapacity where it exists, to try and encourage new aircraft design that's better optimized to the missions being flown, but to try and get even further emission reductions than we've already had in the past. I'll end on that, Chris. Thank you.
Thanks, Tim. That was a very interesting presentation. Well, that brings us to the end of this opening session. I don't know about you, but I found it extremely stimulating. We heard some very good ideas, thoughts, arguments, and I would like to thank all the panelists for their contribution this morning. As I say, it's got us off to a very good start, and thank you again. Perhaps we'd like to just join me in congratulating them.